I used to believe that if two adults made a mistake quietly enough, the world would let it stay a mistake. I thought discretion was a shield. I thought professionalism could absorb almost anything if you showed up on time, met your numbers, and didn't ask for special treatment. I was wrong. What started as a look held half a second too long became a message sent too late at night. That message became a habit. The habit became a secret, and the secret became leverage. I didn't know the exact moment when affection turned into something else. I only know that one day I stopped feeling chosen and started feeling watched. Love didn't explode. It curdled. Threats didn't arrive screaming. They arrived dressed as concern, as reminders, as quiet statements about how fragile reputations are. By the time legal letters appeared, nobody was pretending anymore. HR wasn't asking what happened. They were asking how it looked, and the company didn't care who was hurt, as long as the story stayed clean enough to survive. This is what it feels like when intimacy collides with power, and the damage doesn't stop when the affair ends. I was working for a mid-sized consulting firm with European roots and a polished global image. Glass offices, soft lighting, espresso machines that hummed all day like background noise, meant to soothe us into compliance. I had been there long enough to be trusted, but not long enough to be untouchable. That space in between is dangerous. You're visible, you're useful, you're replaceable. I managed client accounts, handled escalations, and smoothed out problems before they reached executives. I was good at it. People came to me when things went wrong because I didn't panic. I listened, I solved, I kept my mouth shut. Those skills get mistaken for emotional availability more often than people admit. He was senior to me, but not my direct manager. That mattered to me. It felt safer. He had influence without paperwork authority over my job. He was Italian like me, which sounds small but wasn't. There's a familiarity there, a shared shorthand. We spoke the same way about family, about pressure, about pride. In a workplace that loved pretending everyone was neutral and interchangeable, that familiarity felt grounding. It didn't start romantically. It started with alignment. He backed me in meetings. I backed his proposals. We shared a sense of humor that cut through the corporate theater. When we rolled our eyes at the same slide deck, it felt like relief. The first warning sign was how quickly our conversations moved off the floor. Lunches stretched, messages came after hours. Nothing explicit at first, just checking in, just venting, just jokes that made the day feel lighter. I told myself it was fine because nothing had happened yet. I told myself I was an adult. I told myself the company's unspoken rules were more permissive than the written ones. I told myself a lot of things. When the line finally crossed, it didn't feel dramatic. It felt inevitable, like gravity doing its job, a conference, too much wine, too much shared history, a hotel hallway that felt like a private corridor in a life we weren't supposed to have. Afterward, there was that dangerous glow. The one where you believe the worst risk has already passed. We were careful, or at least we thought we were. No public displays, no obvious patterns. We acted like professionals who happened to share something unspoken. But something shifted immediately. He became more present, then more demanding. He asked questions about who I spoke to. He wanted reassurance disguised as jokes. When I didn't respond quickly, he noticed. When I pulled back slightly, he commented on it. I felt the imbalance then, even if I didn't name it. I had more to lose. He had more room to maneuver. And the company culture, with its quiet tolerance for blurred boundaries at senior levels, wasn't designed to protect someone like me if things went wrong. I still thought I could manage it. I had managed worse. I didn't understand yet that management was no longer the issue. Control was. The affair didn't implode. It tightened. It became smaller, denser, heavier. Every interaction carried weight. Every delay meant something. Every work disagreement felt personal. I found myself editing emails not for clarity, but for tone. I watched my words the way you watch your footing on ice. When I tried to slow things down, he didn't argue. He adjusted. He became quieter, more observant. He started referencing our connection in ways that sounded supportive but felt like reminders. He talked about loyalty, about trust, about how fragile everything was in companies like ours. The first threat didn't sound like a threat. It sounded like concern. He mentioned how rumors start, how people misinterpret closeness, how easily narratives form when a woman advances quickly and a man is perceived as indulgent. He said it casually, almost kindly. That's when the fear crept in, not panic. Fear is louder. This was colder, more methodical. I started replaying everything in my head. Who might have noticed? Who might have suspected? Who would be believed if things went public? I considered going to HR then. The thought lasted about 30 seconds. I knew how HR worked. I had watched colleagues get processed under the language of protection while quietly being isolated, sidelined, encouraged to exit gracefully. I knew the questions they would ask. Why didn't you stop it earlier? Why did you continue? Why did you think it was appropriate? So I tried to end it cleanly, calmly. I said it wasn't sustainable, that it was affecting my work, that it needed to stop. I didn't accuse, I didn't threaten. I asked for distance. He didn't explode. He smiled sadly. He said he understood. Then he reminded me of messages, of nights, of things said when people feel safe. He said he hoped it wouldn't ever become complicated because complications ruin careers. That was the moment I understood what I was dealing with. Not a broken heart, not jealousy, leverage. After that, the workplace became hostile in quiet ways. Invitations stopped, support evaporated, feedback shifted. Suddenly my work needed more review. Suddenly mistakes appeared where there hadn't been any. He never raised his voice. He never sent anything explicit. Everything stayed just plausible enough to deny. I documented. I saved messages. I kept timelines in my head because writing them down felt dangerous. I told one friend outside the company just so someone else would know the story existed. When I finally went to HR, it wasn't because I believed they would protect me. It was because I needed a record. I framed it carefully. I spoke about discomfort, about blurred boundaries, about retaliation without using the word. They listened. They nodded. They asked if I wanted to file a formal complaint. I knew what that meant. I said yes anyway. What followed was not justice. It was process. Meetings with neutral faces, questions that circled back on me, suggestions about mediation, warnings about confidentiality, and then the legal letters arrived, not from the company, but from him. They accused me of defamation, of coercion, of attempting to damage his reputation. It was surreal, reading a version of myself I didn't recognize, painted as opportunistic and unstable. The company distanced itself immediately, neutrality, they called it. I hired a lawyer. I spent nights staring at my ceiling, calculating how much truth costs when it's filtered through attorneys. I watched my job become a liability instead of a career. The lawsuit didn't end with a verdict, it ended with a settlement. Most things like this do. Quiet money, no admissions, non-disclosure clauses thick enough to choke on. Everyone walked away claiming victory. Everyone lost something. I left the company shortly after. Officially, it was mutual. Unofficially, I had become inconvenient. My presence reminded them of risk, of failure, of something they couldn't fully control. He stayed. Of course he did. He was repositioned, not punished. A lateral move framed as growth. The company praised its commitment to values while tightening policies that only ever seemed to apply downward. What stayed with me wasn't just anger, it was erosion. Trust didn't vanish overnight. It thinned, it cracked, it stopped being automatic. I became more careful, not just with men, but with institutions that speak fluently about ethics while protecting themselves first. I learned how quickly intimacy can be reframed as liability, how easily affection becomes ammunition, how the law doesn't care about feelings, only documentation, and how companies don't care about harm unless it threatens the brand. I don't regret wanting connection. I regret believing the workplace could hold it safely. I regret thinking silence would protect me. It never does. Nobody won. Everybody bled. And the company moved on, polished and intact, while I carried the residue. The part of the story that never makes it into statements or settlements, the part that lives in your body when work stops being just work and becomes something you survive.